I always look forward to the chin wags. And my guest today, I reckon, on a business card, I suppose, if you put down what he does, I reckon you could have put down jockey, trainer, family man, definitely, mentor, larrikin. I think there'd be a few descriptions that might fit this gentleman. Pat Webster. Morning, Pat. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Is that a fair description?
I don't know about the larrikin. The rest is pretty good.
Oh, hey, don't worry. Later on, I've spoken to a couple of mates. You won't like bounce off your
head. Oh,
later.
Okay.
Now, Pat, a lot of people might be a little bit surprised who don't know you that well. You actually were a jockey. Was your background in racing, your entire family? How'd that come about?
I just, my father was a trainer out west and just went to painting clubs and different things and sort of instilled in you. And then, become apprentice. Lost my mum, passed away at Dubbo. I was only young and went in the stables and become apprenticed.
So were you born in the Dubbo area?
No, I was born at Inverell and then we shifted to Dubbo from Inverell and then, after my mum passed away, I was apprenticed to, I think she was the first lady trainer, Betty Lane, Benny Denise Lane, at a little place called Geary between Dubbo and Wellington.
What was it like back then trying to get a quit out of racing? Was it tough?
Oh, it's still tough to get a quit. No, it was hard. I was only saying to Chris the other day that I remember riding a cup winner and on the way home we had a flat tie and we didn't have much money and a guy backed it. He was a punter and he pulled over and he said, here's $20 and the $20 put some petrol in the car plus fixed the tyre. So that goes to show you know, how tough things were.
Were those days punting days, Pat? I mean, is that how most got an earn out of it?
Oh, for sure. You know, yeah, absolutely. It was all about the punt. Yeah, it wasn't about prize money or anything. It was all about the punt. The prize money wasn't good, but yeah, it was all about the having a bet.
Now you were successful. You rode in town. You won in the city as well.
Yeah. No, I went all right. I sort of outrode my allowance in the country, and then it was time to come down here. So I come down to be apprenticed to B.W. Burns at the old Newmarket Stables there at Inglis's. We lived upstairs there and rode for people like John Inglis. And I went all right till I had a bad fall at Rosehill, and I got really knocked about bad in that, so that sort of changed things around a bit. And then I put on weight. I sort of had about 11 months out of the saddle, so put on a bit of weight, come back and went back to Inverell where I was born. I always wanted to ride back there and went back there and then give it away and come down to worked on the wharves and then took up training.
What was the damage in the fall at Rosehill that put you off the scene for 11 months?
I had a compound fracture of the leg, broken pelvis, cracked collarbone, fractured skull.
Stress.
And shoulder damage. And but the compound fracture of the leg and the skull was the worst two things of it all.
Did you fear that you'd never recover properly from that?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. But and this goes to the reason that I do the apprentices and that with the what I do with the drugs and alcohol, or the alcohol and drugs as I like to call it, is because I was taking different tablets to keep my weight down when I was riding, and that day that I had my fall, I know that my reflexes weren't as good as what they should be, and there's no doubt that's what caused my fall. So they never used to test for things like that then, because they didn't have that, resources then, but they do now, thank God. So, and that's what I preach the gospel with the apprentices, or one of the things I preach to.
You used to see a lot of guys, and sadly, that was all they knew at the time. They were throwing either appetite suppressants or laxatives down their neck like Smarties, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, no, also, yeah, well, that was part of it, yeah. And the, different things. It was, the stuff that you was taking was like speed or LSD.
Yeah.
You'd take it when you woke up in the morning, you'd be going all day, and when you just went to get the sleep, you'd probably get an hour of sleep and then wake up again, take another one, and off you went again. So, and you know, all them sort of things mixed in. You used to take liquid tablets on race day and, your body was really getting hammered through that. But you was probably, riding 7 or 8 kilos lighter than what you naturally should have been too. So it knocked you about a fair bit. I think the limit then was like 47 kilos.
Yeah, 7 stone 7 or 7'5" or something, wouldn't it, in the old?
That's right, 7 stone 7, then you claimed your allowance on that. Oh, first of all, it was 7 stone 4.
Yeah.
And then went to 7 stone 7, and now, you know, these blokes think they're doing it hard. They're
Hey, do you remember your first winner in the city?
Yeah, you always remember first. Yeah. It was a place called Gulgong Valley Royal.
Yeah.
And when I come to town, my first winner was in the Carrington Stakes at Ramwick on a horse called Medieval Maestro.
I spoke to a steward who worked that day. He said, you got lost finding your way back to the store, to the scales to weigh out. He said, Pat didn't know where to go.
No, he didn't have a clue. It was all new. Imagine a kid coming from the bush and then coming riding, and it was a... It was a listed race too, and you're riding against moors and the mullies and the lakes. It was amazing.
What was it like behind the barriers? Did those blokes try and wind you up behind the barriers? I mean, you're riding against... They were not only great riders, but they were very clever the way they spoke to each other, and they were real arrogants too, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. But they were great jockeys, and it was all business. Don't worry about that. Like, Lake loved the beat. Moore and the Mullies and the Podmores and the Came Out. No, those all competitive, but those all great riders. Much the same as now with Berries, Bowmans, Shins, much the same, I suppose.
Who was the greatest rider you saw there when you were riding, Pat?
George Moore.
Yeah.
He was a freak, absolute freak.
He was
the best.
Why was he better than the rest?
Well, he got on the best horse. He rode for TJ, and if he didn't have a ride for TJ, he always had the pick of other rides. And in them days, he'd ring up and offer a trainer the odds or something. You know, he might say, there's the odds of 400 or 500 if you put me on, plus I'll win on it. So it was a bit hard not for the trainer not to put G Moore on, plus you were getting the best rider too. So, he was the best in my eyes, but... You know, you got your Beemans, your Ronnie Quintons, your Huey Bowmans, all these. They're all great jockeys, but just different eras.
Mm.
Trying to line Kingston Town up with other champions, just different eras, but they're very competitive.
Now, when you went training, I saw a report that the day you took out your licence, you sat down in a Chinese restaurant with your wife, and she said, "What's your ambition?" And you said...
It's a long time ago, isn't it?
It's 45 years ago. And
the rusty shovel.
The quote from you is, to train a few winners and have a runner in the Cox Plate.
Yeah, well, I said to her, she said, "How are we going to survive?" I said, I said, "We won't be paying much tax anyway." So I said, "We'll just try and pull off a couple of coups here and there." And I thought I was capable of doing that. And over the years and the early parts, that's how we did survive. And, and last year we had a runner in the Cox Plate. So, we've fulfilled them dreams so far.
The Cox Plate, to have that runner that day, must have meant the world to you, and particularly to be there with Wayne.
Yeah, it was, because Wayne, he travelled down with me. He couldn't fly. He'd had his cancer operation, and he was on heavy medication. He couldn't fly, so we drove down. We stopped at Albury, and I spent a lot of quality time with him. It was sad, but at the time, but it's good now because he's had a couple of good reports back, so... But he couldn't drive, and I just wanted to get him away from what he was doing because he was very depressed, which happens with the medication. So it was a hard trip, but Clapper running in the Cox Plate sort of made it a lot easier. He got his jackets, and he got his sort of broke a bit of a rut that he was in at the time.
Now, on the lead up, on the way through to that, the Villiers would have been probably a race that would have given you a lot of satisfaction when he won the Villiers.
Yeah, it was, because the horse had tendon trouble, and he spent, I think he stopped up at the farm where we are for about 11 months. And with tendons, as any trainer or horse person will tell you, it's very hard to come back from them. But the thing was, we had a good vet in Chris O'Sullivan at Ramwick Equine, and he said to give the horse 6 months and whatever, but Michael Thomas, the owner, who's a good owner, he said, "Well, let's give him 12 months. So we did give him the extra time, but we did do something different. We done like the most in the old days, or sometimes I suppose some people still do it. They just put a wrap on the horse's tendon and turn it out and hope for the best. But we actually, Wayne worked very hard on him by icing him, and we actually kept him there for another month to 5 weeks and done a rehab thing on him that I hadn't done before, and I'm sure that worked.
Now, I saw a report that the horse, Happy Clapper, was a very toey sort of horse. I think before his first start, he flipped out going out on the track.
Yeah, you know, he flipped over and had the horse stalls in at the early part of his, I think it was his second or third prep, and was leading him over, which we float over now, because, and it's only a 5 minute walk, but as he was walking in the track, the band started up, the old, dreaded old band, and he took fright and slipped over. And but thank goodness the stewards let him run, and that started his prep off then for the, which finished up with the Villiers in that prep, so it was good. I think he won five. He won that day, and he won five straight or something going into the Villiers, so it was a really good prep.
Now, speaking of a good prep, as a trainer, you had a good prep. I think you worked with people like Theo Green, George Hanlon, didn't you?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time with George Hanlon, and there's another trainer called Tommy Hughes Senior, and Theo took me under his wing. Well, he was like a mentor to me. I didn't take a lot out of Theo's book as training. I did out of George Hanlon and Tommy Hughes Senior, but Theo, just the way he made me a better person. And whenever I get into a bit of a jam now, it's quite common for me to think back what he would have done at that time and how he would have handled it, because he was just a great man and a very good, as he would say, he's a good citizen, but he was a terrific person and a good citizen for our Green. You only got to look at the apprentices he's had in the past, what they've done for racing, the Quintons and Johnsons and whatever,
I think a good racing term for Theo Green would be, in a way, almost like a great sire. His progeny, as in Ron Quinton and those guys, turned out champion riders, but champion people, and that's flowing on to the next generation as well, a bit like a good sire does, doesn't it?
Yes, it has, with Ronnie, Huey was with Ronnie, and geez, at the moment he's got Andrew Atkins, but Theo couldn't pay me any greater compliment than when he did retire, give me his best horse, which gave me a lot of slow buggers too, but the best horse was At Sea, and so that was the greatest compliment he could have paid anybody, let alone me. So, he was a great man and a great mentor.
Now, I saw some of your plunges over the years. There was one, I'm just looking at the name of the horse here, and you might correct me on this, whether it's true or not. I believe one that you had a real good go at was Marinsky. Got the money at big odds with M. Johnson, then lost on protest to Snowplow.
Well, I still remember it, because I remember Malcolm coming. I sat in the stand in them days, you used to watch it with your binoculars, and you get a good spot in the stand. It was at Warwick Farm, and Malcolm come in. I think Johnny Marshall protested, and I was in the stewards room, and they said, because Malcolm was Malcolm, they said, "Malcolm, what happened?" He said, "Well, sir, the sun was so bright and it was in my eyes." He said, I couldn't see, what was going on, and I shortened him up a bit. And they said, "Mr. Webster, what do you think?" I said, "Well, I couldn't see where I was sitting either, because the sun was so bright in my eyes." So I said, "But it was uphill. It didn't do us any good."
Another but anyway. Jerry Harvey was quoted as saying he loves winning a race with you. And yes. I think you won one at Canterbury, 25-1, Sir Oracle, correct?
Yeah, that was one of these, because they were syndication horses. We used to syndicate them. We used to get the truck at the float and take them over to, he had a Harvey Norman at Flemington, and we used to take them over there, unload them on a Sunday, and Jerry'd come with Katie, his wife, Katie used to syndicate manager, and we'd actually, people had come to the store and we'd actually syndicate the horses in the car park. What about that?
That's better than buying a fridge, isn't it?
Yeah. And one guy, funny, is in a horse now. I've got Ray de Bordeaux. He at the time went to buy a dryer, and he finished up not only buying the dryer, but he finished up a share of Miracle. So, he did win a Canterbury, sir. I think he won seven races in town, and six of them were at Canterbury. He loved Canterbury. But I love training winners for Jerry at any time. He's been very good to me. We're good mates. I've been with him all them years.
You mentioned along the way that the battles that jockeys have, you're a racing mate and you work with Racing New South Wales, helping those who have a few hurdles placed in the way along the way. I think one of the good things is you help them, but you stick with them. And Josh Adams is a prime example of that.
Yeah, well, Josh, we're only talking to Smining because, look, it's been amazing. And it's all right to, you know, I can jump aboard the Josh Adams bus because, you know, I was driving it at one stage, you know, so to speak. And look, he's just come from it's just been great to see where he was and how he's come back. And it's just really good. And they rang to do an interview on Sunrise on a Saturday morning. And I said to Josh, do you want to come on it? And, you know, he said, oh, that'd be great. And the people said, oh, that'd be good too. So, no, it's been a good trip with Josh. And but there's a lot that you don't hear about that they've also achieved major goals with drugs and alcohol where they've been that, you know, it's not publicised and people don't hear about it. But, you know, we've helped a lot of people and it's really good. But Josh is the high-profile one.
Pat, this is something you've been passionate about and so supportive of the people over the years. What's the worst drug you've seen?
With a personal experience, is heroin. I do 2.5 days a fortnight voluntarily at a place where we help a rehab for ice addicts.
Yeah.
But that ice is really bad. Well, ice is terrible. But I had a long and awful experience with taking it myself, but with heroin. And oh wow, what a trip that was! You know, it's still ongoing. So I'd have to say heroin, but naturally ice is the curse of all evil. So you know, hopefully nothing any worse than ice comes along. But there's always someone out there to make money and. I think, you know, where there's money, there's got to be things like that going on, but definitely heroin.
What is the worst thing it does to people, you think?
Which, heroin?
Yeah.
Well, in the old days, you'd say, I wish, or this put it in order, in the old days, you say, oh, I wish my child had just smoked marijuana instead of taking heroin. But now you'd say, I wish my child took heroin instead of ice. Jeez. Put it in comparison. But with heroin, you don't get a lot of violence, though. A lot of stealing, a lot of breaking in, and different things. But ice is there's a lot of violence with ice. So there are two different sorts of drugs. But heroin's a lot different to ice.
What advice do you give, say, to young kids listening at the moment who at this stage haven't thankfully crossed that line, had a crack at this stuff?
Well, the thing is to the company is and their peers, like a lot of these kids go to concerts, and I can sit down with six or seven apprentices and I can open up a bottle that I put six or seven tablets of Panadol in, and they're sitting there looking at me, they've been the track work, and I'll say to them, well, you take one of these now, but Racing New South Wales is going to test you tomorrow morning at the track work, and these are eckies. And they go, oh no, why would we do that now? You know, what? That's silly. And I go, okay, if you go out on Saturday night at a 21st or a friend's birthday and you've had a lot of alcohol to drink and someone saddles up alongside you and says, here, take one of these. I said, would you take it? And they say, probably 7 out of 10 say, probably under those circumstances, we would. So, you know, we call it drugs and alcohol, but I think we should call it alcohol and drugs because alcohol leads to that. Because while you're drinking alcohol, and you know yourself, and we all say, oh, when you have a good drink and that, you do things that you normally wouldn't do. And this is what happens with the kids when they go to parties or whatever, and that's how they start on it.
The amazing thing is a lot of them will say, I only drink bottled water and I only eat organic fruit and things like that, but they'll stick a pill down their neck. made by some yahoo in a bathtub in a backyard. They wouldn't have a clue what's in it. Could have crushed glass, could have weed killer, anything at all. Yet they'll pop it down the neck thinking it's going to give them a kick.
Yeah, well, look at ice. It's what it's made out of. You've got stuff made out of battery acid and the chronic, smoke that they do. They spray it with Peebo, but they don't realise that. But what I'm saying, that's what I'm saying. They just drop their guard and they've got to be careful who their friends are, the peers, who they mix with. Everything's with who. You lay down with dogs, you get up fleas, water finds its own level. You just got to be, if you're in good company, things won't go wrong. But I always tell them about their new friends if they're successful too, because I won't mention names, but even one of the most high-profile jockeys we got in Australia at the moment, I'm sure his friends, new friends, got him into trouble. So you got to be careful with your new friends, not your old friends. I tell them stick to their school friends before they were riding winners or before they were successful. They're the friends, but not the new ones. They're the ones to be careful of.
Sounds
you don't
like
want to be your friend for one reason, because you're successful and they can use you to make money.
Sounds like you're almost channeling Theo Green.
I am channeling Theo Green. That's why I say, I am channeling Theo Green. But like I said, sometimes I think back when I'm in a jam with premises and that, I think back to what Theo would have done and it helps me through.
Now, I spoke to a mate of yours, Johnny Sadler.
Johnny Sadler.
Yeah.
Him and Robert Smurden would be my two best training friends. They're beauties.
Well, I said, tell me something about Pat. He said he remembers going to the footy with you one day.
Yeah.
And he said he thinks when he came back from Dubai, and he had Edward and Thomas, his sons, in the car.
Yeah.
And I got to word this carefully. There was a car in front of you, driven by, shall we say, what would be described in a courtroom as colourful identities. And John said, you were a little disappointed they weren't driving quick enough, that they were going a little bit slow, these blokes. And John said he was more than happy to let them drive at 5K an hour if they wanted to. And you've hung out the window and given it to them. And he said the kids were terrified. And Johnny said, I reckon I was even more frightened than the kids. He said, Pat would not back off. And these blokes got the wind up and kept moving. And he said, I'll sum him up. You cannot scare him.
No, well, that's... We were pretty keen to get to the game, I didn't follow the Swans at the time, but I do now. And so that did happen. But I'll tell you what happened. So we go upstairs, and he had Edward and Tom there, and those only little boys. Anyway, so I think his mate coached Carl. Anyway, so as the Swans were running out, little Edward went boo boo, and I remember Sads going, Edward, don't boo Mr. Webster's team. You can't do that. But no, that's not good. He's a great, great mate of mine, Sads, and we bounce off each other when if I got something that's going on with a horse that I'm want to find a bit out, I always ring him and Robert. Mm. But he's a good friend.
Another
and a good trainer.
Yeah, too right. Another trainer said he often does things just to see the look on your face and say, can you have a look at this kid riding this trial, and always nominated as being the last trial, so you've got to hang around. He said, just to see the look on your face.
Toddy Howler, that
yeah,
isn't
that
it?
Is, yeah.
He drives me mad, that bloke. I can't believe he does it to me. He does it in company too. I'll just be walking out and he goes, don't forget, McCullough's got a ride in the second or third last trial. Where is it? Musselbrook's or somewhere, and I'm not going to get out late. He says, can you stop and watch her? I just say, no, but I'm awake up to his little tricks now. But I did take it serious at first. But I think, it's quite funny, isn't it? He's got this... He's a lovely bloke, Toddy Howlett, and he's got this smirk on his face. No, but it's all good. No, he's a good person.
Pat, when you look back over the years, what's been the most satisfying winner you've had? Is it Happy Clapper?
No, I'll tell you what. It was at sea, because I hadn't had a group winner. It was at sea at Canterbury, and he just got beaten Expressway Stakes the start before, and Darren Beaver used to ride at sea, and at sea had to be really pushed to be in a position, and he had to be really hammered. Like, if you had them whip rules that we have these days, he wouldn't win a lot of races. He did. And what happened, Ronnie Quinton conned me I don't tell many people this story, but Darren had got suspended, and Ronnie Quinton rang me. He said, "Pat, you know, whenever Darren can't ride at sea, I ride." And I go, "Oh, I didn't know that, Ron." He said, "No need to ring Theo because that's how it works." I said, "Okay, well, you ride him anyway." Ronnie couldn't hammer him like Darren could, but he run second on him. But Darren come back from suspension, then rode him in the Canterbury Stakes at Canterbury. It was a good field too, and he won it. So that'd have to be. It's always good to break the ice, and you come from the bush, and you only got a small string, and that, and your upbringing, you never think you have a group runner, let alone a group winner. So at sea, being our first one in that race would have been very, very special.
How would you feel if on Saturday you beat Winx?
Feel like a twoies. I'd feel pretty good with myself. I might just take my villain mask out in case it happens.
You wouldn't be humble. You'd just say, "Bloody beauty, we got the money."
Well, look, how many times do, when Winx runs a race, when Happy Clapper run second tour in the Doncaster, no one come over and said, "Oh, gee, mate, your horse runs second, you're running against the champion, but I hope you have a bit of luck or whatever in the near future." And I got my owner, and I got my horse, and I got my staff, and I got Happy Clapper's fan club, so he'll be there to represent us on Saturday, and it'd be lovely to think he could knock her off, but, funny things have been known to happen, haven't they, on a racetrack?
Yeah, we look at Ajax, a few of those. There have been a few over the years, haven't they? Absolute ball
yeah,
over.
Exactly. And Sam keeps talking about Sir Darius. Do you, how good's your memory? I don't know. He said, "Sir,
I think he beat Tullock."
Ah.
I reckon he beat Tullock.
Yeah, he said yesterday he rang me. Oh, I had a slow one in his race, and he was giving it to me. And he said, "Don't forget," he keeps going every time we talk, "Don't forget Sir Darius beat some," and then so it was Tullock, was it? Okay,
yeah.
He can't remember who he beat, but he remembers he beat him.
Yeah, Prince Darius it was, and he beat Tullock. Okay, yeah. I'm just looking, beat Tullock in the St George Stakes.
Yep.
Yeah, he beat him there. Just
He keeps bringing it up, and you know, as we all know, all good things come to an end. But I'm there for Happy Clapper, and as Chris is for all these horses, I'm just there. We've only got six in work. We're looking forward to Saturday because Happy Clapper's in a good place at the moment. I dare the dream, but we all dream, don't we?
Yeah, and you've got to enjoy life. That's the bottom line, Pat, isn't it?
Oh, of course it is. That's my job, and we're in it for the enjoyment and the fun of it. And I'm just so privileged to even have a runner in it, the George Main, to even think, even if Winx wasn't even in it, to have a horse with a chance. I'm so privileged and so honoured to be in the position we're in.
Well, I think another handy horse you had, he had a real good strike rate. I'm trying to think of his name, but a mate of mine said, "You're going to have lunch one day," and said, "Nah, listen, I'm going to Gold and I'll win the cup."
Parfumia.
Yeah, got the money.
Geez, you've got a lot of mates, haven't you?
Oh, only a couple, but they talk.
especially at lunch on a Friday. Jerry owned him a horse called Parfumia. But probably one of my best horses, a horse called Ab Initio.
Yeah.
He was a horse that, he's a big grey sprinter, but he won six groups, but he broke the 25-year-old track record at Randwick, and since it's been broken again, but the track had been re-canvered. So, as far as I'm concerned, it would never have been broken, but he was a great sprinter, good horse. He won a TJ. He was a good horse.
Well, we wish you all the best on Saturday. You can take your villain mask along, and I reckon if you do turn out the villain, no one would deny you, Pat.
Well, if it does happen, just look and you'll see the mask, and no one can deny it. But, you know, it goes back to a guy called Paul Semp looks after Clapper, and Ainsley Fox, she rides in work. And look, to see these kids the other day with Clapper won. And my grandson, who we've had since he was 4 weeks old, he's lived with us since he's 4 days old. I mean, we've had him not 4 weeks, 4 days. And his birthday was 18 the other day when Clapper won. So it was just amazing, and such a good feel. And like I said, I'm just privileged to have a horse to be able to run in these races. So I'm enjoying it as everyone else is.
Well, I reckon the kids you look after are privileged to have you looking after them too, Pat.
Yeah, they are all followers of Happy Clapper. When I do our little meetings and that, they, you know, sort of, no, the one runs, one thing runs into another, and they're all, or as one of the Japanese kids calls him, Happy Crapper. He was on Channel 7. He said, I said, what do you think of Mr. Webster's horse on Saturday? He said, Happy Crapper go very well.
Well, let's hope he claps in on Saturday for you.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the interview. It's been great.
Been terrific. Good on you, Pat, and good luck Saturday.
Okay, thank you.
Pat Webster there. Great to have a chat with him and a chinwag this morning on Sky Sports Radio.